It's a Slim Time production.
We back with the second episode of the Courtcast in the new year 2022. Obviously, you can tell it's me by now. The voice of reason for a reason. The voice of truth. I speak the truth, only the truth, and nothing but the truth. As usual, is your host, Feyi. And then we have a returning cast from last week. The Black Skibillas himself, Femi. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, as always.
And then the second in command of the Blind Witnesses, Tosin. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Can you give me a second? I'd like to say something.
Yeah, sure. The floor is yours.
You deserve to say something.
He's apologizing for the ridiculous take he had last week.
Let him speak.
I'd like to give a shout out to Fuyi. I've heard wonderful things about Fuyi. She's a huge fan of mine. I want to say your huge support, especially last week. Haven't heard my takes. You really went out of your way to speak your mind and really big me up. And I want to say I appreciate you for the support.
He's so delusional, bro. He's actually convincing himself that he's nobody defended you, Tosin. Let me just tell you, nobody defended you. We're cool. Still not over that list. I won't be over the list until you give us a proper apology.
The list
is visionary. The list is visionary. In 20 years from now, you would understand what the list
is.
I'm the Kanye of the podcast.
No. Please.
Don't do that to yourself.
All right. As usual, we have a lot to talk about today. So let's get into the first one. Usually, I think that no episode has gone by where we haven't spoken about this goddamn team, the Los Angeles Lakers. And I'm here to, you know, on Wednesday, I sent a message to both Tosin and Femi. I told them, here's my badge and ID. I resign as a Ross stan. I'm done.
That's right.
Lakers need to move on from him. Everyone needs to move on from him. Great career he had. First Ballot Hall of Famer, MVP, triple doubles leader, Mr. Triple Double, everything. But it's
you know what I say to people like you, better late than never. It's okay that you've seen the light now. You were in the tunnel for a long ass time, but as long as there's light at the end of the tunnel and you can see the light now, I really, you know,
it's not just on him though. Let's get things straight. This Lakers team is straight trash. The team is trash.
They're so bad.
Trash. Like, at the beginning of the season, I don't know what I was thinking to believe that putting a couple, I don't know, maybe I thought this was Uncle Drew or something, putting a couple 40-something-year-old players on the same thing was going to work, on the same team was going to work. Like,
they don't have enough hungry players on that team.
They do not. Every single person plays like they've accomplished the world and they don't want anything more. Yeah. Like watching that team against the, I'll be honest, guys, like, I'm not a liar. I haven't watched the Lakers game since December 26th, honestly.
Damn.
The last Lakers game I watched was the one where they got blown up by Karl Anthony Towns and the Timberwolves. That's the last Lakers. I just realized that this team is never going to win. So, and
well,
then my life...
I just want to check on your mental health. Are you okay? Lakers,
I've been so happy. I've been so happy ever since I stopped. My everything has just been going well in my life ever since I stopped watching the Lakers.
You start watching Brooklyn and Kyrie.
Please don't be a bandwagon. Let's not get into them yet. But yeah, watching the game against the Nuggets yesterday, I'm just like, there's nothing. This team cannot win a team that is not the Houston Rockets or the Oklahoma City Thunder or the Detroit Pistons. They cannot. And it's not just on Russ, even though he's a major culprit. Like when AD went down, we all said, oh, we expect him to step up, stand into the... This man has just been... I've never seen him as inefficient as this on back-to-back-to-back nights. It's 2-for-15. It's 4-for-18. It's 3-for-10. I'm like, bro, they're not even guarding you, bro. How do you keep missing so much shots?
Do you know what I find as the most interesting stats about Russ? So, you know, like the duration in which he has the ball for most of his career has always been super high, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, he's injured.
Yeah, if you say great. And in Lakers, this is probably his lowest or one of his lowest. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, his turnovers are still all-time high.
Of recent, he's cut it down. Ever since that zero turnovers game, he's had like three turnovers in general. Like he had another zero turnover game yesterday.
Russ heard, okay, let me turn down my turnovers. And then let me turn down my points. Let me turn down my
let me just turn down everything.
Yeah,
let me just turn down everything. And Malik Monk was on fire at some point, but you know, he has obviously been cooled down. Melo is no longer making threes like he was at first. I can't diagnose a single problem with this Lakers team because they're like scully. Like there's so much wrong with that team. Like there's just no solution in sight. There's nothing that can be done about this team. You can't break the whole team up mid-season. So you can't do anything. You can wave Ken Bazemore, you can wave DeAndre Jordan, but all you're going to get is a couple guys who are on the free agency market at this point in time for a particular reason. Like, it's a reason they're free agents. It's a reason Isaiah Thomas hasn't been picked up by a lot of teams recently. It's a reason Stanley Johnson didn't have an NBA contract, even though he's young, he's energy. Well, not really young, but like he has energy, he can play defense, he fouls too much. It's a reason these guys aren't, you know, on NBA teams midway through the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel embarrassed picking this team to win the chip. I feel embarrassed ever backing this team. They do well to make the playoffs. That's a good season for them as far as I'm concerned. But I want to know what you guys think about the Lakers.
Femi, can go ahead.
I don't know what to tell you. What I already told you before. Russell is shooting the same percentage right now that he shot the past 13 years. And he's shooting 1% worse from three than he's done the past 13 years right now. So pretty much like what we're saying is everything I've been trying to tell you for the past couple months, bro. And hey, you know, you come into city lights, whether you're in the tunnel, whether you are on the mountain or in the valley, welcome, because I've been trying to tell you. I've been trying to tell you. To be honest, with the rest of the team, here's the thing. As a point guard, you control not only the pace of your team, but you control the energy.
Russell doesn't play the point for the Lakers at this point. He doesn't. It's LeBron. LeBron runs the point for the Lakers.
But here's the thing, though. When they put the ball in... Do you know the play that... The play that got me riled up. You know what? When they played Sacramento, right? When they played the Kings.
Yeah.
Braun had pulled them way back into the game. And then I seen him walking with 5 minutes left. And I'm not playing. That did not build my confidence that the Lakers were going to win.
Mm.
So imagine them players. And then
Sacramento game.
That three really
upset me because he had Harrison Barnes on him. So that's an easy blow by. And it's not like it was like, you know, Richaun Holmes on help defense. It was Buddy Hield. So that could easily have been an and one. Easily.
Or an easy kick out.
Easily.
And here's the thing. Why did he broadcast it to him so that he could get the ball back so he can reset and like, you know, get it?
Yeah.
And then why, bro?
I think it was going to be something like, oh, y'all ain't expecting me to shoot. Gotcha. But then he missed it. So he just missed it bad. Just ended up looking stupid. Like stuff like that. If he comes off, you're like, oh my God, big balls, Russ. But if it doesn't come off, it's like, why on God's green earth would you take that three? That's just what, there's a popular statement, you live and die by Russell Westbrook. And you know,
I know
I fought it for so long, but it's true. You live and die by Russell Westbrook.
Broski, they were down 4. They did not need a 3 with 3 mm-hmm. minutes left.
They were down 5, you know, but they still didn't need a 3.
They still need, and then guess what? They went back down, boom, 3, boom, another 3. They're down 11.
Yeah.
But you don't need to make play like
and that. Then another thing about the Lakers is Tyrese Halliburton said, we knew we're going to be able to get whatever shot we wanted. Tyrese Halliburton said this about a Lakers team with 6 or 7 first ballot Hall of Famers. They can't cope with the pace and intensity of teams like Sacramento. You know how quick De'Aaron Fox is. You know how quick Tyrese Halliburton is. You know how quick Davion Mitchell is. They can't cope. They simply, anybody that can come and play with energy, there's a reason why they blew 2 big leads to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Any team that plays with quickness and energy, the Lakers cannot cope. And you can't blame them because majority of them should be in nursing homes because of how old they are. But it is what it is. Like, this team is just straight trash. Like, you know, Jeannie Buss looks like a complete idiot for everything, for putting this team together. But I can't blame her. One last shot. They were putting the squad back together. One last shot at the Rucker tournament. But unfortunately, it didn't work. Tosin, what do you think of the Lakers?
I'd like to focus on Russell Westbrook. I'd first like to premise it by saying, Russell Westbrook is not the only problem with the Lakers.
Yep.
They're old. They can't keep up with pace. Most of them get tired easily, and then you see them walking around.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them defensively, they don't keep up with their man. They just ball watch. So there are a lot of problems. But with Russell Westbrook, I think he needs to look at Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball is not like someone that you think would get like a 25-point game or anything of that nature. But Lonzo Ball finds different ways to affect the game. Now, Lonzo Ball came into the league and his 3-point shooting, this guy would shoot a bunch of air balls. People would boo him.
Yeah, his mechanism was just off.
Yeah, and this guy put in the work during the summertime, and he's a very decent 3-point shooter now. So Westbrook has no excuse to just be someone that cannot shoot. Like, you can literally focus on that in the offseason, and actually, like, you should be embarrassed watching yourself on tape, seeing how teams leave you open, mm-hmm. and actually just stick your ass to the gym and, you know, practice these shots. Also, if you look at Lonzo Ball wouldn't take like dumb shots. Like, Lonzo Ball wouldn't miss the last 5 shots and come down the court and then take like a shot you can't. As a basketball player, you can't take a shot that would just hit the backboard and wouldn't even hit the rim. It doesn't make any sense. You're not a center. You're not a center. You're a point guard.
Kendrick Perkins said the next time Russell takes a bank shot, the Lakers should fine him his entire week.
legit, because, bro, how you hit the same spot from the same spot?
I think
I
think the Lakers should use Russ in the post more. Like, obviously, he's a big guard. He's 6'4". He's like 140, 50-something, 60-something pounds. He's bigger than most of the guards he's going to match up with. So if they put him in the post against, like, a Tyrese Halliburton or against, you know, guys that are just smaller than him.
What is that going to do, though? Like, he has no post game. Like, he's not going to, like...
Yeah, but he's just bigger. He can back them down easily. Like, Russell played... But if you watch when he was in Houston and some parts when he was on that incredible run in Washington, he played in the post for a significant amount of time. Even though he had most of the ball, like, he did play in the post a lot of times. And just because he's bigger than most, like, it's not like he's 6'8 on 6'8 where they would need like post moves to get it done. He can just back them down and use his ability to finish at the rim, unless he's blowing wide open layups at the rim.
In Washington and OKC. Even if he's playing on the post and making bad decisions, the problems will be like magnified like when he's on the Lakers. If this guy is playing on the post,
at least those teams could play defense. At least those teams could play defense.
Yeah,
and
they weren't playing on national TV like every other game. Like, this one, everybody can see it. And I don't trust him to make the right decision. Like, if he's backing down in the post,
you know,
and
then that's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Shades him. I don't expect him to, or I don't trust that he will make the right decision. I feel like he will still try and force up his shot, and it will be a bad shot.
You know, that's exactly what I was going to say about Russell and Lonzo Ball. I feel like Lonzo is naturally gifted with his passing ability and his basketball IQ. Russ is not a great passer of the basketball. But he makes things happen. That I feel like that's the difference between two of them. Like, Lonzo naturally has a high... Like, you look at Bron. Bron naturally has the highest IQ in basketball and is the best passer in basketball. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that doesn't come natural to Russell. And the fact that, you know, he still manages to get a lot of assists is testament to his greatness. But at the end of the day, figuring out ways in which the Lakers and Russell Westbrook is just... Like, I honestly feel so bad for Frank Vogel right now. Like...
Like, the excuse cannot continue to be, oh, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm not playing point guard. I don't have the ball as much. Like, you're a basketball player. You have to find your way to
the Lakers have played more than Lakers have played more than 43 games. They play about 43 games, bro. Regular season is 82 games. They've played more than half their games. And they are below 500.
And you're a veteran as well. You can't still be trying to figure it out.
I'm sick of this team,
my problem with Russell is 13 years, you don't learn the importance of time and score.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like that, especially in the playoffs where possessions count.
Yeah.
Like 13 years into the league, bro, like you look at CP. CP, bro, I know CP turns the ball over at crucial times. Look at the finals, right? But... For him to get there, though, you have to at least understand.
And another thing about Russell, I agree 100%. He turns the ball over in the most. He's like a good quarterback that throws three touchdowns in the first half, but when it comes down to the 2-minute drive, when the game is, you know, you're down by three, he just throws an INT. That's Russell for you. That's what he does consistently. And then another problem I have with Russ is that one thing about great players is when they are aging is that they find ways for them to still produce at a high level without necessarily when their body gives up on them, when they can't continue doing what, like Bron was great at driving to the rim. Mm-hmm. Now you see him taking a lot of fadeaways. CP3 has always had that mid-range game in him. So he didn't necessarily adjust, but he just, you know, allowed him to play for longer. Look at Derrick Rose. He was very explosive. After he ruptured his ACL, D-Rose has probably the best floater in the game right now, aside Trae Young. You're not as explosive as you used to be. Find ways to make yourself better. When he was in OKC, he was really good from mid-range. Now you heard Kendrick Perkins say he shouldn't take a bank shot in his life again. That used to be his shot. That used to be his shot.
One last problem I have with Russ is if you make one shot, you don't need to have a heat check. Heat checks don't come after one shot.
Heat checks? Somebody needs to... Oh, my God. That is facts.
Like, he makes one shot. He rocks the baby. He celebrates too much. And then he thinks he's on fire. He needs to have a heat check. No. You don't have to go down the court and then just shoot, like, a crazy-ass three.
Mm-hmm. This thing about Russ's shot selection is not even an issue starting today. I remember the game against... the Hawks last season when he broke the triple-double record. Literally, they were down one. They get the ball. The Hawks miss the three, and then there's 6 seconds left on the clock, and they're down one. And obviously, every natural human being would expect Russell Westbrook with the natural gifts and talents and ability that he has to drive to the rim, and he stops on a dime and pulls for three. And I'm scratching my head. I'm thinking, why would you do that? And obviously, he breaks it. And when the game ends, he doesn't care. He's asking the ref for the ball. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what to do. I don't know.
It's quite sad because when I watch his post-game interviews, like, I actually feel bad because this guy...
I did feel bad for him when did you guys see that clip where they called him the point guard and he laughed and was like, that's funny? I felt so bad for him because, you know, he's still my favorite player, but...
You're a loyal blind guy. Like,
I'm not blind. Man. I just accepted he's not being good enough, but he's still my favorite player.
It's his lack of accountability for me, bro. I'm telling you, you're getting paid $44 million and then you're getting paid $43 million next year, fam. I'm telling you, bro. I get where he's coming from, where I'm getting paid regardless, so I don't give a damn about the turnovers. fine. But when it's a when the goal at the end of the season is we need to lift that Larry O'Brien, it starts from game one.
All the way to game seven of the finals. All the way to game seven of the finals.
All the way.
But you can't expect Russ to change after playing the league for how many years now? He has played a particular way for such a number of years.
That's the problem I'm trying to make to you. That's the problem I'm trying to
say. And LeBron and Lakers fans, they don't expect him to just change like all of a sudden.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that trade shouldn't have been made. At the end of the day, that's what it all boils down to. The trade shouldn't have been made.
And they can still trade him now.
But who's taking that $44 million?
Pistons.
Russell would rather die than go to Detroit, bro.
It's not Russell's decision. It's either Detroit or
I don't
or
think
China
the Pistons are in a rebuild. The Pistons are in a rebuild. The Pistons are in a rebuild. I don't think you guys understand. They are bound by that contract. If nobody wants him, Russell is not taking this thing. What they call it again? It's not pay cut, but pretty much it's not doing what Blake Griffin did, where they accepted the payout and all buyout.
Yeah.
He's not doing that.
I don't think with AD's contract and LeBron's contract, they can't even buy him.
It's one of the biggest mistakes the Lakers have made, and you know, sadly,
and the voice of reason could not see it coming. But anyways, let's move on.
As a Lakers, as a Russ fan,
voice of reason. I think Russ was being objective.
I will mute you. All right, next thing, you know,
I dare you
guys. We had an argument about who the best big in the league was. Tosin went for Jokic. Tosin and I went for Embiid. Tosin went for Jokic. Femi and I went for Embiid. Joel Embiid is in the MVP conversation, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I am concerned, and as far as every reasonable basketball fan should be concerned, Joel Embiid is in the MVP conversation.
Again, I know you're in another tunnel, and that's okay. As long as you come out soon.
Fam, do you know that the Jokic you make so much noise about, Embiid has won more games than him?
First of all, Embiid plays in the East. Jokic plays in the West.
Is better than the West.
Cap.
Okay, let's look at the teams in the West. You have Phoenix, you have Golden State. That's pretty much it, to be fair. Those are the only two elite teams in the West.
With Memphis, don't you think they can beat like?
They are not elite yet. The Memphis Grizzlies are not. We're going to get into them, but they're not elite yet. Like Phoenix and Golden State are the only two teams I can say are elite in the West. But in the East, you have Brooklyn, you have Milwaukee, you have Miami, you have Chicago, you have Toronto. You know, you have elite teams in the East.
Wait, why did you mention Toronto? Was that a slip of tongue?
No, we're talking about elite teams in the East. Femi Alai, Toronto is an elite.
why are you arguing with him? Why should you waste
it's true, energy? It's true. The man had Jokic and Doncic in his list
The man listed an European list and had the Canadian Steve Nash in there.
I see the agenda. It's okay.
But honestly, bro, Joel.
I apologize, but Kukoc played off the bench for Chicago Bulls. But continue.
Three rings. Steve Nash is Canadian. We put him in a European league.
All right, man.
The Sixers sit comfortably in this thing, fifth spot in the East. They've won 25 games. I remember at a point they were on this losing streak. They have won since Boxing Day, they've won 9 out of 10 games since Boxing Day. And they're doing all this without Ben Simmons.
In 7 of them.
Do you know, Embiid scored 30 in 9 out of those 10 games.
I'm not mistaken.
Ten games. The only game he didn't score 30 was against the Celtics, where he had 25, 13, and 6. In that span where they had won 9 out of 10 games, the only loss coming against the Charlotte Hornets, where he had 32. Embiid is averaging 32 points, 10.2 rebounds, 4.2 assists. And he's doing all this without his point guard. Shout out to Seth Curry as well. He has been absolutely phenomenal in these two seasons in the Sixers. And Tyrese Maxey as well, stepping up. Matisse Thybulle playing defense as usual. Tobias Harris, still the worst contract in the NBA as far as I'm concerned. The man is making $180 million and still nobody expects anything from him.
I feel like this, how you make those, money. Those arguments you can make for Jokic as well, because this guy is missing half his teammates.
No, half his teammates or Jamal Murray. He's missing Jamal Murray.
What about MPJ?
Oh, yeah, that's true. MPJ is off for the season.
Yeah.
Oh, Jokic against the Lakers had 17.
Bro, 18, Jokic had a triple-double. With 9 minutes 39 left in the third quarter,
with the king, honestly,
that is a joke. The man had a triple double with 9 minutes 39 left in the third quarter. Joke, bro. Joke.
But I just want you to know they beat the Warriors as well. This guy is literally doing it with Campazzo. I don't know his name.
Campazzo is a gifted basketballer. Please put some respect on his name.
I know.
The man called him Campazzo. Justin, come on, man.
Come on, man.
Wait, but my point is, he's playing with like mediocre players. They're not all stars. They're not even like people that would get contracts like a Tobias Harris. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, because only a madman would give Tobias Harris $180 million in the NBA.
No, you have to remember when Tobias Harris was playing on the Clippers, he deserved that contract.
Fam, $180 million. Are you smoking booch? $180 million. Come on, man. $180 million is a joke. Like, you can't give to Tobias. $180 million is the money you give to ADs and Beats, not Tobias Harris.
I mean, but to be fair, like, I wouldn't be mad if you pick like Embiid over Jokic. To me, it's a toss up between both of them. It's just preference for me in this style, in their style of play.
I think Joel Embiid has to be in the MVP conversation. He has to be.
So who would you displace? I don't know. Like, when you say MVP conversation, how many people are you mentioning?
I put him over LeBron.
All right, man. That boot you talked about, I think you have it close by, right?
Listen. LeBron, when Russell gets a triple-double and the team loses, what do you call it? Empty stats. LeBron is putting up 30 in losses. Empty stats. Joel Embiid is willing his team to wins without their point. Like, Ben Simmons is over there getting engaged to Maya Jama. Like, I'm not sure the man has been in a court in how many months.
You don't want his personal growth?
What? Tosin, please, let's be serious. Ben Simmons hasn't been in a basketball court for how many years? For how many months, sorry. He hasn't practiced. He hasn't done anything. And apparently, Rich Paul met up with Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey in Philly to discuss the situation. But they're not willing to budge. They're like, you know, we have him for 4 years. Ben Simmons, as far as I'm concerned, he still has no right to act the way he's acting. But I won't get into that today because I would be mad because Ben Simmons
the man has dated more models than he has
NBA threes.
Attempted NBA threes. That's
yes, like honestly, that's bro. Like, and Embiid is still willing. They're fifth. And I'm telling you, at some point, the Sixers had lost 6-7 games in a row when Embiid didn't play. Joel Embiid is doing it all for this team. Like, honestly, there's
so what is your top five MVP candidates right now?
Then, I would have you're gonna put them in there. Obviously, we'll get into the Nets in a bit, but KD did get injured yesterday. So, as of now, given the performance against Golden State the other day, Giannis is my number one. After Giannis, I'd have KD. After KD, I'd have DeMar. After DeMar, it's a tussle between Jokic and Embiid.
Okay. So Steph has left that conversation for you.
Steph has turned into Russ ever since he broke the 3-point record. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And they got blown out by Milwaukee as well.
They got destroyed by Bobby Portis. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah. Shimmy, shimmy, shimmy.
And
yeah.
Then for the...
Bobby!
Next topic, the Miami Heat, they seem to be making some noise in the East, you know, and nobody is talking about them.
No, those guys are—they're definitely a very strong contender. They're consistently good against in matches that count.
Exactly. Like, do you know even though they lost to Philly yesterday, do you know the thing about Miami? They keep finding some of these players that you're like that will light you up for like you know four to six threes, and you're like who the hell is this guy? Like Doc Rivers was talking about Omar Yurtsev. Let me find his name. Omar Yitzvern or something like that yesterday. Yeah, Yurt 7, mm-hmm. Omar. And Doc Rivers is like, I don't know where they keep finding guys like this. Like, it pisses me off. And honestly, it's a joke. Like, Markieff Morris obviously hasn't played since he got run over by Yoke. you have guys like Dwayne Dem. And do you know that Bam Adebayo has been out for about 3 months right now?
Yeah.
And they still have the third best record in the East.
Like, their win against the Suns, like, for me, is a huge statement.
They didn't have Jimmy Butler and Bam for that game. I don't think Kyle Lowry played as well.
It was just Tyler Hero.
And Duncan. Duncan made 8 threes in that game.
Yeah.
Nah, this team is legit, man. And one thing I've learned ever since I started watching basketball is to never doubt El Padrino. Never doubt the Godfather. Never doubt Pat Riley, bro. Mm. Never, ever doubt Pat Riley.
Yeah, no, that is true because with a full Phoenix Suns team, they had everyone.
And they still won.
Not only did they win, they held these guys to 100 points. Like, to me, that's the biggest statement. Like, defensively, they're right there.
Like, I feel like
Phoenix Suns to 100 points is crazy.
I feel like, I don't know, but for some reason, every time we talk about best coach in the NBA, we always overlook Spo. I don't know why.
Because he's consistently good, but he's not like exceptional. You get what
so
I'm saying?
So because he doesn't break records like the way Steve Kerr did.
Yeah, people tend to overlook that.
But you can't doubt the consistency. You cannot.
No, definitely.
Spo is definitely a top three coach in this league any day and in his sleep.
Interesting.
See, come playoff time, I wouldn't pick. There's not three coaches in the NBA I would pick to be my coach ahead of Eric Spoelstra.
Steve Kerr.
I would pick Eric Spoelstra.
Oh my goodness.
I'd pick Ty Lue.
Wait, you pick Eric over Steve Kerr?
I told you, you guys know I believe Tyronn Lue is the best coach in the NBA.
I mean, I understand your sentiment with Tyronn Lue, but...
Okay, what about Coach Bud and Nick Nurse?
You know the thing. If we're playing against Giannis, no, but you saw what this guy Spo did to Giannis as well when he had a good team.
You saw what Nick Nurse did to Giannis.
That's what I'm saying. Like if we're going against Giannis, I would pick Nick Nurse because shout out my Raptors as well. They beat the Bucks yesterday with no Scottie Barnes, no Ken Birch, and we had only 8 men in rotation. Utah went out after 5 minutes, and we still beat the Bucks. You know, Bobby Portis is trying to tell Pascal not to make noise about an and one on your head, boy. Put some respect on our name. But as I was saying, Nick Nurse, when it comes down to playoff time, his ability to throw different defensive coverages at certain players is what makes him an elite coach. And I get the argument for Nick Nurse, but I still pick Spo. Spo has done it consistently. Remember, even when they got the big three and whatnot, they wanted to sack Spo. But when they all bought into Spo's vision, They won 60 games that season. I think they won like 20 games in a row. Or was it 23? And Bron was shooting 60% in the field for three months. Like Spo is
definitely feel you on this Spo versus Nick Nurse thing, simply because of like the resume. Like this guy's done it for a longer time. But
Spo
I feel like picking Spo over Steve Kerr is kind of a stretch because Steve Kerr has won championships like. Same more wait more than this guy, Spo, right?
No,
they have the same, right? Four.
Spo has three.
Didn't he win with Dwayne?
06.
No, 06 was Pat Riley. Pat Riley was coaching.
Oh, Pat Riley, okay.
Pat Riley was coaching 06.
And Steve has three.
Yeah, Steve has three.
But look at what Spo did ever since the 2019 playoffs. I've always known that I can never, like, Eric Spoelstra for me is top three, is a top three coach in this league any day, anytime. The amount of defensive
top three. Maybe top five. I don't know about
name me four coaches in the
NBA. I'll still pick Pop over
Pop?
Eric.
Pop? Yeah. Pop is washed. Pop can't keep up in the NBA today. I'm telling you, name four coaches in the NBA today that you would pick over Eric Spoelstra. They don't exist. I wouldn't pick Bud over Eric Spoelstra. I wouldn't pick my Budenholzer over Eric Spoelstra. I would not. I wouldn't pick Nick Nurse over Eric Spoelstra. I definitely wouldn't pick Frank Vogel over Eric Spoelstra. I wouldn't pick... I'm a big fan of Monty Williams. I wouldn't pick him over Eric Spoelstra. I wouldn't pick Taylor Jenkins over Eric Spoelstra. I wouldn't pick Rick Carlisle over Eric Spoelstra. I wouldn't pick
Steve Nash
over Eric Spoelstra.
I'm picking myself over Steve Nash.
I wouldn't pick Steve Nash. I wouldn't pick JB Bickerstaff over Eric Spoelstra. There's not a lot of coaches in the NBA that I would pick over Eric Spoelstra, especially going into the playoffs. Spo can make it work with anything.
I don't know about top three.
Name four coaches in the NBA better than Eric Spoelstra if you don't know about top three. Name four.
I don't know about their
You
names,
can't tell me name. What do you mean?
Bro, I'm telling you, Steve Kerr is like ahead of Spo. Like, there's no questions about that.
I'm not picking Steve Kerr over Eric Spoelstra. I'm sorry. I'd pick Ty Lue.
14-15, right? After the first year, he only had Steph and what's it called? Steph and Clay and Dre, right? The first year, Femi. And he won.
Femi. If Kyrie,
and Kevin Love
played that series, would they have won the chip?
No, forget about that. I don't think you understand.
No, we wouldn't. They wouldn't have won the chip. It would have been Kyrie 5 or 6 easily.
It was overtime in game one when Kyrie went down, so he would have been closer.
Kevin Love didn't play at all.
Wait,
Kevin Olynyk literally broke Kevin Love apart. Kevin Love didn't play any game in that series.
What's his name? Draymond would nullify Kevin Love, and you know
how
that.
Would Draymond nullify Kevin Love?
Because they don't run plays.
That Cavs team didn't run enough plays for Kevin Love.
Draymond would have been on LeBron.
That's why Iggy won Finals MVP in the first place.
Yeah, for holding LeBron to 33 points
a game. And what's his name? If you had Kevin Love, they had Kevin Love the years after that. And what did Draymond do to him? What did Kevin Love have whenever they played?
Kevin Love wasn't a scorer on that team. Kevin Love had to sacrifice. He was the Chris Bosh of that team. But you cannot tell me that if Kevin Love didn't play, if Kevin Love played, he would have just been nullified. No.
The fact is, the Warriors don't win that chip
in 2015 with Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving playing. That's a fact.
No.
That is a fact. So how did they end up winning in 2016, even when the Warriors won 73 games? It is a fact.
It's not a fact. Because what did Kevin Love average? It's not a fact.
How many games did he? How many games did LeBron on his own take that Warriors team to? It ended in 6 games. 6 games without Kyrie and Kevin Love. Are you telling me that the Cavs cannot win two extra games
when
Kyrie and Kevin Love are playing? Come on, why are you acting ridiculous?
My point is, it would have been closer. It would have been 7 games.
How closer can it be than 6 games without LeBron and without Kyrie?
That's why I'm saying it's going to be. I'm not saying the Warriors are going to win.
Oh my God.
I'm saying the Warriors are going to win for sure. Let's move on. It's going to be closer. Because
LeBron had Kevin Love too. What do you mean by closer?
7 games.
Was that series close? Oh, it went 6 games.
Yes, it was. Look at the point differential. Yes, it was.
And Kyrie and Kevin Love didn't play. So what are you telling me? You're making my point for me. The point differential wasn't that much. You just said it. And Kyrie and Kevin Love didn't play. And he still took them to 6 games. So
even when they won, right? Even when the Cavs won, the first three games were a blowout, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they got better the next season. The Warriors got better the next season. The Warriors get better the next season.
I'm talking about 16, 15, when the Cavs won, right?
That's what I'm saying. The Warriors got better the next season. You don't win 73 games if you don't get better. They got better the next season.
And who wants to get them coach?
Oh, my God, bro. You're not making... Your point is not making any sense because... Femi, you said...
Thank you, Femi. That's what I need to hear. Femi, you said
2014-15 would have been closer because if Kyrie and Kevin Love played, it would have been closer. I don't get how it would have been closer when the Cavs still ended up taking them six games with Kevin Love.
We're arguing the top three coach.
You said in 2014-15, it was only Steph. It was only Steph, Clay, and Draymond. And in 2014-15, they didn't have KD at the time. But in 2014-15, it was only LeBron that played in the final.
Who was the coach?
You're arguing blindly. You don't understand where I'm coming from.
Who was the coach? And they won 67 and 15 games. Who was the coach?
Steve Kerr was the coach.
The original point is you can't name three. I can name three better coaches than Eric Spoelstra.
You haven't named three coaches. You've only named Ty Lue and Steve Kerr.
And I'll personally take Nick Nurse. That's my three. Thank you.
That is a joke, honestly. That is a joke.
Thank you.
But Spo needs to be as far as I'm concerned. Every single
one won the ring.
So what, bro? So what? I'm a Raptors fan, but I wouldn't pick Nick Nurse over Spo.
Ty Lue's first year won the ring. I don't care what anybody says.
Spo won the ring in his second year. What's your point?
His second year. Not his first year. He had LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. Is that loss on Braun, or is that loss on Spo? Is that 2011 finals? Let's move on. You're not making any sense. Like you argue with Russ and Frank Vogel. If Frank Vogel put Russ in the best position to win, then Russ should take advantage of that. Did Spo
make Braun score 8 points and turn the ball over in a crucial game?
Did Spo make Braun score eight points in a crucial game five and turn the ball over in a crucial moment? No, he did not. You can't put that on Spo. The same way you give Braun more credit
when the Miami Heat won the chip in 2012 or 2013. You don't give Spo the blame when he doesn't do well in 2011. That's a joke.
I'm saying, my point is, Frank Vogel put Russ in a position, and Russ put the ball off of AD's head. So what's the point about coaching and player?
Okay, yeah, now you're just trolling. You're just trolling. But yeah, let's talk about the Nets blowing out the Bulls. I didn't watch the game, but I was pretty surprised by the outcome because I didn't think it was gonna be. I thought it was going to be more competitive, but I feel like he just gave us a glance or a picture of what the Nets are going to be with Kyrie Irving come playoff time, because the game was played in Chicago's, it was played at Chicago's home ground, and they ended up blowing them out by more than 20 points, I think. And it's just Kyrie, like Kyrie on that team makes it a totally different team. And I feel like with KD going down now, hopefully he gets better soon, but the MRI is going to come out today. But I think it's going
to
be like...
It's a 4 to 6 week.
Yeah, 4 to 6 week injury. That's what I thought when I first saw it. So the likelihood is they don't get the number one seed in the East. So it looks like the Nets are going to be cruising through the East.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'll try to tone down my love for Kyrie in this episode. Psych, your thoughts. Kyrie's really that guy, man. So obviously you only scored 9 points, but I've seen like posts where they say Kyrie's like the soul of the team. Like his 9 points is probably more important than maybe like a Paddy Mills scoring guided, 20 points.
Be guided, bro. Like, it's just his presence on the court. It's like he Clay. His presence on the court makes things easier for James Harden and Kevin Durant. It's like when if Kyrie and KD are playing, James Harden's presence on the court makes it easier for Kyrie and KD. If James Harden and Kyrie are playing, KD's presence on the court makes it easier for two of them. Like, you have three people who are possibly some of the best, not possibly, who are literally some of the best scorers in their positions in NBA history. So,
what do you think if it wasn't Kyrie and it was Westbrook? What do you think?
You're not making any sense. I'm just saying, like, don't try and gas up right, 9 points. You're trying to gas up nine points, like he played well.
My point is, it's not just about having three great players on the team at the same time. I know, of course, that plays a role where they can double team players. The other players probably have like more confidence and all that. But my point is about being the soul of the team is like the way, first of all, they play faster with Kyrie. When Kyrie isn't playing, you can if you watch the games, they play a lot slower because James Harden like brings the ball up like in a slow fashion. But they play faster with Kyrie, and people actually they succeed more. Other players around succeed more. The bench seems more lively because when they're on the bench, they're laughing more. And when they're
Talk about what happens in between the lines.
This guy is trying to make nine points.
Guy, you're trying to gas this up as the best nine points we've ever seen in our life. Like, bro, he scored 9 points. He didn't play well.
Wait, relax. I didn't even talk about the 9 points yet. I'm talking about the effect of Kyrie on the team psychologically.
Just allow it, man. You sound like me when I'm defending Ross, bro, about when he's on the court. He makes them laugh. Who cares about laughter? Who cares about what goes on in between the lines?
Simple fact. All I know about that game was, sorry if Tosin, please.
He's going to call out DeMar.
Why would I call out DeMar? Calm down. Let me even finish. You guys, it's almost like you guys are trying to figure me out. Calm down. I was going to say it was 71-71 mid-third. I was watching the game. Right, so it was 71-71 mid third quarter, and I don't know. Kyrie was off the floor at this time, so I don't even know what clicked with the Nets, bro. But they just played defense, and Kevin Durant,
was KD.
Yeah. He was just Kevin. I don't know about Kyrie. That was probably the most inefficient 9 points I ever seen Kyrie get because it took him that many attempts.
The way you guys watch basketball is very interesting to me. You guys say you don't know what happened, like they were playing different. I'm trying to tell you guys why they were playing different. But
the honest truth is, I've said on this show like a number of times how the Nets play good defense on the perimeter. They run people off the 3-point line. They do it consistently.
Okay, tell me why they've struggled against playing big teams.
Interior. They don't have anybody on the interior.
But Kyrie is not an interior defender. Why didn't that matter?
Against the Bulls?
Yeah.
Was it a good performance? I think that was their first big win this season. It was a really good performance. It was a great win. But don't try and put the KD scored about 30 points. James Harden played well, but then you're trying to talk about Kyrie's 9 points. Like, come on, man.
First of all, you sound ridiculous. Oh my goodness. I let you guys argue about a hypothetical 2015 finals for probably 15 minutes. Pointless. But if you guys listen to what I'm saying, obviously, all what you guys are saying are true about, like, Kyrie and all those things. But what I'm saying is you guys are not picturing or thinking about the psychological aspect of what he brings to the team. Granted,
Kyrie brings a lot to the team. Like, every single time I hear Jason Tatum talk about Kyrie's leadership, it just makes me believe that, you know, the media can really paint anyone to be a villain, even in situations
What I'm trying to say is, Kyrie might not even need to score 20 points for them to play differently.
But now then, what you're doing is taking the credit away from people who actually balled out and putting
Kyrie's hands. I'm not taking away any credit. I'm only trying to give Kyrie's credit. I don't have to take credit away from someone to give another person credit.
That's what you're doing now, because you're crediting the win to Kyrie, saying he was on the court and they were laughing. That's why they beat the
I mean, you're going to say it. You're saying my point in an absurd way. You're making it seem because they were laughing. It's cool.
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing with the Bulls. That's why when I meant that they needed that go-to star, because at that point when the Nets were on the behind and they were cooking them, the Bulls were finding it so hard to decide either they should go to DeMar or go to Zach.
DeMar is
that little, I know, but for that game, that little ambiguity in between, I need to decide whether it's my turn or
we're talking about the Celtics last week. It felt like at some point they were playing my turn basketball. Like they went away from what actually made them successful and started doing, I take the shot now. You take next time down. Yeah, that's what it was.
Absolutely.
But credit to them. It was a fantastic
DeMar and Zach shot poorly, though. They didn't shoot poorly. It was a really good win.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, basketball is a game of runs, and Nets happen to go on a run that led them to winning the game. But we don't have a lot of time. Let's move on to the Memphis Grizzlies. And these man had won 11 games in a row until Luka Doncic and the Mavericks, Femi, went in and ended their win streak. And on Friday.
That's why.
So I just want to know, do you guys see the Grizzlies as genuine title contenders, or do you feel like their ceiling is like a second round exit or something?
They might even be a first round.
Because for me, Taylor Jenkins has to be in the conversation for Coach of the Year now.
No, 1,000%. He has to be, because he has players that very young, very, very, very young core.
And it's not Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks have missed a number of games this season as well. And they currently sit third place in the West. They sit third place in the West, playing 45 games, winning 30.
And here's how you know you have good coaching. When two of your best players are gone and the level of your team's play doesn't reduce drastically.
Yeah. Or when your star players don't have it going, but you still end like against the Lakers, I think Ja had 8 points, but he still ended up picking the dub in a convincing manner. Right.
Absolutely. Against the Warriors.
Yeah.
Ja started off very hot, but the defense started, clogging down on him. And then the rest, like Brandon Clark, he's very mobile big.
I love Brandon Clark. Grab your rebound.
His backdoor cuts are the best in the league right now.
And he can make make some of those threes as well.
For sure.
Yeah, I don't see them as a genuine contender, just because they don't have that
not
experience.
Contender, no.
They don't have that experience. But they're probably
go out the first round.
They're probably the most fun team to watch in the NBA right now. But it's some playoffs, they're allowed to play with pace and all that. When it's half court time, come playoff time, we'll see if their offense will still be able to produce at that high level. But also, credit to Steven Adams as well. When they made the trade, Valanciunas for Steven Adams, everyone was talking about, how that's such a downgrade, Valanciunas this, Valanciunas that. But Steven Adams is balling out. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but in terms of screen setting, aside DeAndre Ayton, I don't see any big that's better at setting screens than Steven Adams in the league.
I mean, if you've been setting screens for Russ half your career, man.
Yeah.
You get better at it, bro.
Yeah.
And that because Russell's assist, I'm not trying to call Russell out, but Russell's assist most of the time came from dumping off the roll to Steven Adams. So he's pretty, if he sets that screen, he's rolling to the rim and you find him.
And he's probably the strongest man in the league as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he has great hands for a big. So you can
He really does.
You can find him off the bounce pass on the roll, or off the lob. So like,
yeah, he's
quite.
When Ja was injured, I watched him. I watched him run a 2-man game with Desmond Bain, and I was like, yeah, that is quality. Like he just swallows you in terms of his screens. Like you have nowhere to go. He's the defensive anchor as well. So shout out to him. He's having a great season. But I think we can all agree that they're the most exciting team to watch. But I don't see them as genuine contenders.
Yeah, just so it's on a side note, guys, in case you guys are going to make a parlay, never bet against 12. I'm going to just be.
Careful now. You know, 12 out here. Tosin, you don't see them as contenders too yet?
No, I do not. I do not. I see them more like a Portland from years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
They don't have... They're like a good regular season team, but they don't have enough superstars to play.
Yeah,
it's slow paced game.
So like the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
Like All right.
Just lastly, one comparison I've read so far is they compare them to like the first Thunder team with Harden, Ross, Young KD in terms of like superstar and like role players and picks.
Yeah, but when they mature, you know, realize, you know, because Barnes always says, when you first come into the league, you don't even know how to play basketball. You're just working based off your athleticism. But when you're able to read defenses better, when you become experienced as a team collectively, then, you know, things will start to get better. But I don't see them as contenders for now. And obviously, as a Raptors fan, I have to ask this question. Do you guys think, Tosin, please do not hate, be as objective as possible. Do you think the Toronto Raptors can make the playoffs?
Yes, I've always said, beginning of the season, I believe I told you this. Our ceiling right now is just to make the play-in tournament. The East right now is too stacked.
Yeah.
It's too stacked. Even Washington is a good team in a sense.
They were my sleeper. Tosin said it was cute, but you know.
Nah, you know what? Screw Washington, because guess what? I play a parlay on them. The Bradley Beal fouls out, and then Kevin Porter hits that game winner. I'm like, bro.
Yeah.
I think
the Raptors can make the playoffs. I really do think they can make the playoffs.
Maybe playing.
I think they can make the playoffs because with Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet, both of them have won a trip. So they know what it's like, come, you know, half court settings and all that. They know what it's like to make a deep playoff run. OG was there, although he didn't play because of his injury, but they know what playoff defenses are like. Unlike some of these other teams, like the Washington Wizards, the Charlotte Hornets. And I feel like that is going to be critical if we do end up in a playing spot. Because right now, I think we've won 6 out of 7 games. Freddie's balling out. Pascal had a 30-point triple-double yesterday against the fully healthy Bucks team. Like, the Raptors are not, you know, an easy team to play. Especially playing in Toronto, they're not an easy team to play against when they have the crowd right behind them. So I think I genuinely think, like, all bias aside, not just because I'm a Raptors fan, I think they can make the playoffs, but obviously their ceiling is a first round exit. Tosin, do you agree with me?
We need to understand that Milwaukee did not have their point guard.
Haven't had Drew Holiday for a while and they blow out the Warriors.
And secondly, I do feel like you can make the play-in. I know I originally said you guys wouldn't even make the play-in, but you guys are on a hot streak right now. Obviously, I don't know how long Fred will like continue this type of play. He's not a superstar.
Just ask Steph. Steph will let you know how cold he is.
He's not a superstar that can continue this for many more games do we have left in the season? Like.
Pascal is.
You may not. I'm joking. You may.
I think would make the play in, and I think we'd make the playoffs as well.
But yeah, I think you definitely be in contention with like the Boston Celtics.
I think it would be a tough first round.
New York Knicks.
I don't think the Hawks are making the playoffs though. Honestly,
I mean, no, those are the teams in the play in. Yeah.
My guy Scotty Barnes is gonna lead you out of this tunnel, fam.
He's gonna what?
My guy Scotty Barnes is gonna lead you out of this tunnel, fam. You're gonna come out this tunnel. You're gonna see the light, boy. One day.
You'll see the light.
First of all,
one day,
it's not even top top two in the rookie of the year conversation anymore.
Because he has been injured. Because he has been injured.
See, one day this guy's gonna wear
a ball scratched
jersey.
But last but not least, and let's try not to spend a lot of time on this, but do you guys think the Boston Celtics have a Jason Tatum problem? Let me explain what I mean by Jason Tatum problem, right? Watching Jason Tatum, one thing that frustrates me, and I've said this continuously about him, is I know he's a three-level scorer, right? I know he can score in the paint. I know he can take mid-range shots. I know he can score from three. But the thing that upsets me the most is the amount of times he settles. Like, his best attribute is finishing at the rim, but he doesn't go to the rim as often as possible. And he often tries to be like this, point forward. He tries to force it like he's a playmaker. Tries to force, you know, dump off passes to the big, and he ends up being just frustrating turnovers. And I'm like, I think Jason Tatum is part of the problems of the Boston Celtics. Because whenever I watch Jaylen Brown, it's almost like, to me, Jaylen Brown understands his game more than Jason Tatum. Like, I don't often see him jacking. Like, Jason Tatum is definitely averaging, as I saw their stats the other day, Tatum is averaging 25 points, averaging more points than Jaylen Brown. But Jaylen Brown is averaging 24, so just like a point difference. And he's very much more efficient with it. I think he's shooting 48% from three and 48% from the field and 37% from three. And Jason Tatum is shooting 41% from the field and 32% from three. Like, I feel like that is the difference between two of them is Brown understands his game and Jason Tatum does not. And he's still a superstar. He'll still put up 25 points a night. But I feel like until they address, obviously, their point guard issues, and Jason Tatum understands that, you know, you don't have to settle for these shots consistently. You are 6'10", you know, almost 200 pounds. You can drive to the rim and finish consistently. And then that will make your game way less predictable because you have the fade away in you. You have the three in you. Like, but just don't continuously settle for shots. That's why I believe as of right now, the Celtics have a Jason Tatum problem. But I want to know what you guys think.
I've been consistent with saying they have a point guard problem, a decision maker problem. Their biggest problem to me is decision making. And I'm relying on Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. Those are bucket getters. They're going to want to get bucket for themselves. And I think with a solid decision maker, they will cut down on bad shot selection. They'll probably get people like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown easier shots. Mm-hmm. So things of that nature, because these guys, they have to play one-on-one to get their shot off. They don't have like a way to create shots for themselves in a team setting.
Call me crazy, but I feel like they should have picked up Rondo in the offseason. Because I was watching the Cavs-Warriors game, obviously for Klay's return, and shout out Klay Thompson as well. That dunk on his return just put a smile on my face for real. It just made me remember all the memories. But I was watching the game for the Cavs-Warriors, and Rondo is bringing the ball up the court, and he sees his own defense. And immediately he communicates to Dylan Windler, I'm going to pass the ball to, I think it was Evan Mobley. You're going to roll out. Mm-hmm. And he just round the play, gave the ball to Evan Mobley. Mobley gave it back to him. Dylan Windler rolled out, and it was a wide open three for him, and he's automatic. Like, these are the kind of things. Like, there's high IQ play, high point guard level play with Rajon Rondo on your team. And I feel like he is the type of player that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown need as of right now in terms of development in their career. Which is why I think he could have probably, even though at 36, he's 34, he's not mobile and all that, but he would have done wonders for them on offense, as far as I'm concerned. And he would have used Robert Williams as well. Fermi, what do you think?
I absolutely agree. I was currently actually just thinking of a point guard that they could get.
I mean, I liked Ricky Rubio till he tore his ACL. I like Malcolm Brogdon as well for the Celtics.
Malcolm Brogdon might just be the only, because they will need a generic point guard to come in there and be like, okay, guys, this is the sets we're running, and this is when we're going to be running this sets per se. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Rondo was also a very good mention. If they just had that person where assist-wise, they would have to worry less. You know what I'm saying? Because they already know they just have to worry about scoring and, scoring and maybe rebounding only. Mm-hmm. And defense, that, like, getting players in position to score is actually quite the toughest thing to do on the court. You know what I'm saying? Because they have to get the ball, and then you would have to dish it properly, and then they have to finish it. You know what I'm saying? So, a good point guard, definitely, like, what's his name? Brogdon would be immense in terms of, like, opening up their offense, because now you just have spacing everywhere. And, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So,
I feel like they could have gone after Lonzo Ball as well.
Yeah.
More like Lonzo
would have been a great pickup, honestly. Great, because now they're trying to force a Marcus Smart, who is really a 3-and-D guy, and trying to make him a playmaker. Like, that's not his game. He's trying to make a Dennis Schroeder a playmaker. Mm-hmm. He's a scorer off the bench. His game is not to come in and facilitate. And I think, obviously, I think they need a point guard. But as well, the main question is the Jason Tatum take. Do you guys think they have a Jason Tatum problem? Like, I get if it sounds ridiculous. Like, Tatum is averaging 25 and nice. What more could he do to help them? But in terms of refining his game and just trying to cut some of those silly mistakes out, I believe Tatum is one of the issues that the Boston Celtics are currently facing.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. And nice. There's some merits to what you're saying. I just think that type of problem is not something you get rid of. I just think the solution is the decision maker solution.
I mean, if you get a coach that will bang it in his head, you know, you would see him refrain from doing, because he's still, what, 23, 24? You'll see him refrain from things like that. But like I said last week, I just don't think Ime Udoka is holding them accountable enough.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but if you look at, like, Kobe Lakers, if you watched it back then, you'll probably be as frustrated. It's just Kobe Lakers, they had, like, you know, decent decision makers on the team as well. You don't have to be a passer or something. You can just be like assigned.
Yeah, but that's even with Tatum forces the pass sometimes. That's the problem I have.
Right.
Ultimately, I agree with you guys in terms of getting that decision maker in. It's just gonna make them settle down, because now Tatum will probably have to force that pass consistently.
Yeah,
the pass could be a solid option, because all that's, like Femi said, all in his mind is just to rebound, play defense, and get buckets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if they got like a Campazzo type of guy now.
Campazzo.
Well, yeah.
Good. Quickly before we go, who would you guys say is your coach of the year so far?
Coach of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Coach of the year. Okay. There are many candidates for me, low-key. You have Billy Donovan.
Yep.
I was about to say that guy slipped in.
I'm just going
to
give you top three.
Mm-hmm.
You have Billy Donovan. You have, for me, you have Steve Kerr.
Mm-hmm.
And my third pick would have to be... It has to be low-key Doc Rivers, because nobody is expecting shit from... Taylor Jenkins, sorry.
Thank you.
Memphis's coach, sorry. Because the reason why I said Doc before Jenkins is because, like, nobody really expected the...
You guys know me. I have a Doc agenda. Doc can do no good in my eyes.
I know you... Sorry. That's why I just changed my people. Before you
Tosin, who's your coach of the year? Or do you want to give a top three or something?
Yeah, I'll give a top two or three, actually. Memphis Grizzlies, mm-hmm. Chicago Bulls,
mm-hmm.
and Golden State. And my reasons are pretty similar across the board. For Chicago Bulls, they had like this period when like COVID hit them pretty hard. Yeah. And they were still able
they
to
were still
like,
winning games. Yep.
Yeah. And even right now, Karu Goods has not been playing for a minute now. Mm. And their second unit, obviously, probably not as strong defensively because Karu Goods is in there.
Ayo is playing some good basketball though. Ayo Dosunmu, something, I forgot his name.
Yeah, he is. And that's the thing, they're using their personnel pretty well as well. Yeah. And they know their strong suit and they're using them in those areas. Yeah. So I think he's doing amazing. Memphis Grizzlies, for obvious reasons, even when Ja is not playing up to par or he's injured, they're still, you know, winning games. And Golden State, just because Klay, their second best player, has been injured for the most part of the season, and their record is what their record is. So I think the coach. It's
amazing. For me, obviously Taylor Jenkins seems to be unanimous within three of us. I have JB Bickerstaff because it seems like I'm the only one. I'm the only one on this podcast who consistently gives the Cavs their credit. So I'm going to give them the credit again. Nobody expected this from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Darius Garland is playing the best basketball of his career. The man had 24 points, 5 rebounds, and 18 assists yesterday. 18 assists. Let me check how many turnovers he had. But in general, the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing some pretty amazing basketball. And I genuinely feel like he deserves to be mentioned amongst the Coach of the Year candidates. Sits, you know, fourth place in the East, currently 8 games above 500. So it's Taylor Jenkins, JB Bickerstaff, and Billy Donovan for me.
That's fair. With the Garland, he had two turnovers.
And two turnovers and 18 assists. So that's a joke.
Yeah. They're balling out because even Mobley has been injured for... Like, he's been in and out in some ways as well. And they always find ways to win.
And then their social media team as well is top-notch. So they deserve that as well.
Oh, I see. I followed them, fortunately.
Yeah, but unfortunately for our listeners, we've come to the end of another episode of the Courtcast. This one was a bit heated. I guess you guys can't tell. But thank you for coming on the show, Femi.
Anytime.
Appreciate the time, and thank you for coming on the show, Tosin. Appreciate the time as well. As usual, like,
it's share, my turn.
Leave a rating, like, share, leave a rating. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter. You know, thank you for listening. Appreciate it. It means a lot. Thank you for sharing as well. Thank you for leaving a rating. Appreciate it. Thank you and good night. We out.
I need some Hennessy.
It's a Slam Time production.